Welcome to the First Pitch Podcast, brought to you by PitcherList.com, your daily morning podcast, updating you on everything you need to know to win your fantasy baseball league. Here's your host, Jake Crumpler.
What's up, fantasy managers? Welcome back to another episode of the First Pitch Podcast, brought to you by PitcherList.com. My name is Jake Crumpler, and it's the weekend, so as always, I'll be taking over for Bubba as the host of this weekend edition of the podcast. You can follow me at Jake Crumpler on Twitter and can find all of my work at CrumplerBaseball.com. Let's dive into everything baseball-related from Saturday, June 15th. We'll start it off, as always, with the transactions, injuries, news, and notes from around the league, starting with the bad news. Starting pitcher Kyle Bradish of the Orioles was placed on the 15-day IL with a right UCL sprain. Bradish left his last start with elbow discomfort, a concerning development considering his extended absence to start the year with an elbow injury. Bradish missed the first month of the season, so it'd be reasonable to expect him to miss a similarly long period this time around. This injury means Cade Povich, Cole Irvin, and Albert Suarez will hold on to their rotation spots for a little longer until Dean Kramer returns. Starting pitcher Jordan Wicks of the Cubs was placed on the 15-day IL with a right oblique strain. Wicks was pulled from his most recent start in the second inning and will land on the IL with a grade 2 oblique strain. Obliques are tricky, especially when they're moderately severe like Wicks's is. We can expect Wicks to miss at least a few weeks recovering from the strain, though it's probably going to be more like 6 to 8 weeks. It's unclear who the Cubs will turn to replace Wicks in the rotation, but they have a number of pitchers with the ability to go multiple innings in the bullpen, namely Kyle Hendricks, who is the most likely candidate to shift back to the rotation. In terms of transactions, outfielder Brandon Marsh was activated from the 15-day IL. Marsh missed just under 2 weeks with a hamstring injury and will reclaim the everyday left field role, likely getting occasional breaks against left-handed starters. And in terms of news, outfielder Michael Harris II was placed on the IL with a hamstring strain. We talked about that yesterday, but it was made official today. More news surfaced today that it is of the grade 2 severity, meaning Harris is due for an extended absence, probably at least 5 weeks. Jared Kelnick will shift to center with Adam Duvall shifting to left to accommodate Ramon Laureano in right. And now we'll check out the notable performances from Saturday, a day in which we had just 14 games as the matchup between the A's and the Twins was postponed due to weather. We'll start it off with our hitters, leading off with Hunter Goodman as he helped the Rockies to a win versus the Pirates, going 4-for-5 with 3 runs, 2 home runs, a double, and 5 runs batted in. The 2 home runs doubled his total for the year. He's up to 4 now. The first one traveled 440 feet. It was the second longest home run of the day, and it went 104.5 miles per hour, while the second one went 429 feet at 106.8 miles per hour. Goodman has proven in the minors to have power, and on Saturday he proved he has it in the majors as well. Across AA, AAA, and the majors last year, Goodman hit 35 homers. Between AAA and the majors this year, he's totaled 11, so he clearly has a ton of power. Goodman has been unlucky this year with a .222 BABIP that should realistically be over 300 in Coors. And sporting a 14.3% barrel rate, Goodman is someone that can be counted on in the power department, especially as a streamer in Coors. The best part, the Rockies are using Goodman as their backup catcher with Elias Diaz on the IL, so he could gain catcher eligibility and maintain outfield level playing time when Diaz returns. Keep an eye on Goodman, especially in Yahoo leagues where he already has catcher eligibility. Josh Rojas helped the Mariners to win versus the Rangers, going 2-for-3 with 3 runs, a home run, 3 runs batted in, and 2 walks for good measure. He's up to 4 home runs on the year now, and this one traveled 395 feet at 104.8 miles per hour. Rojas is more interesting now than he's ever been. Last year saw his fantasy relevance disappear in Arizona and reappear when he moved to Seattle. Rojas has carried those gains over and is sporting the best WRC Plus and StatCast metrics of his career. The Mariners are also batting Rojas second against right-handed pitchers as he mans the strong side of the third base platoon, so he's got plenty of run scoring opportunities. Sadly, Rojas plays in the toughest ballpark for left-handed hitters and provides only slightly above average production in 4 categories. I think Rojas is more of a 15-team play with viability as a streamer in standard leagues. And lastly, we have Colt Keith as he helped the Tigers to win in Houston, going 4-for-6 with a run, a home run, a double, and a run batted in. It was his third home run of the year, and it traveled 379 feet at 98.4 miles per hour. Keith got his major league career off to a dreadful start after signing an extension in the offseason before playing a single game in the majors. Keith rose up prospect lists after belting 27 homers with a balanced approach across AA and AAA last year. However, he was unable to initially carry that success over to the big leagues this year. Through mid-May, Keith batted 171 with a 24 WRC plus while failing to go yard once. He looked like the worst hitter in the majors, but he was clearly unlucky, sporting a 206 BABIP, and he's turned things on since then. From May 15th through Saturday, Keith has batted 325 with three homers and a 139 WRC plus. Keith's true talent level is somewhere between those two extremes, but this stretch has vaulted him back into relevance in 15-team leagues, and if he keeps it up, he could be an option in 12-team leagues as well. But if you'd like a breakdown of notable hitting performances from Saturday, check out the Daily Batters Box article over on pitcherlist.com. And now we'll head to the mound and check out the notable starting pitching performances, opening with DJ Hurz as he helped the Nationals to win versus the Marlins. He earned the win tossing six scoreless innings, allowing just one hit while walking nobody and striking out 13 batters. He induced 21 whiffs with a 38% CSW across 84 pitches. Acquired from the Cubs via the Jeimer Candelario trade last year, all Hurz has done throughout his professional career is strikeout batters. With his 13 strikeout performance on Saturday, Hurz earned the King Cole by leading baseball with his 38% CSW. Hurz also joined Steven Strasburg as the only pitchers with at least a baker's dozen punchouts and no walks in one of their first three career outings. Hurz also recorded the second highest strikeout percentage in a start by a rookie in MLB history, trailing only Kerry Wood's 20 strikeout game back in 1998. It was a truly historic performance for Hurz. He obliterated Marlins hitters with a lethal fastball changeup combo. The heater racked up a whopping 13 whiffs with 39% CSW, while the change induced 6 whiffs of its own and went for 45% CSW. It was a great performance, though I think we have to blame the Marlins for this one. Hurz did not have the precision the line would lead you to expect. His arsenal also doesn't stand out, but maybe unfamiliarity and deception play a bigger role in Hurz's first starts than we thought. Hurz heads to Coors for his next start, and I'm avoiding that, but if it works, I'm all in for the Padres after. Charlie Morton earned a win versus the Rays, tossing six innings, allowing just three hits and one run while walking two batters. He struck out eight, inducing 22 whiffs with a 35% CSW across 105 pitches. Our secondary streaming pick of the day came through, and as I mentioned yesterday, all Morton needs is one pitch to pair with his usually nasty curveball. Well, he had two pitches to pair with the curve, which allowed him to surpass Hurz with 22 whiffs to earn the gallows pole by leading baseball in whiffs on Saturday. The curve did its usual thing with 10 whiffs and 38% CSW, while the four-seamer and changeup were dependable sidekicks, combining for 10 whiffs and 40% CSW. If only this could stick from start to start for Morton. Unfortunately, consistency has been hard to find at his age, despite what his sub-4 ERA would suggest. He's a cherry bomb, meaning he's a coin flip every time out, agnostic of matchup. That makes Morton a risky stream every time, especially in the Bronx up next. There's no way I'm taking that chance. And lastly, we have Jose Quintana as he earned a win against the Padres, tossing six innings, allowing two hits and one run while walking two batters and striking out six. He induced eight whiffs with 30% CSW across 88 pitches. And Quintana has had a weird career. He looked like a budding ace on the south side, but pitched like a mediocre Toby on the north side before reviving his career in Pittsburgh as a dependable veteran. But now it looks like age is catching up to Quintana in his mid-30s as he's sporting the highest ERA of his career in a season with more than 10 starts. Saturday's start doesn't really change the outlook on the southpaw. Quintana is a kitchen sink pitcher and can only be trusted in the easiest of matchups when he has command of his entire repertoire. We witnessed perfect separation of his arsenal on Saturday with four-seamers up and glove side, sinkers and changeups down and arm side, and curveballs down for strikes. It's the recipe for success for Quintana, but reliance on balls in play on typical nights makes him someone we can't trust to execute every single start, and I will not be streaming him in his next outing against the Cubs in his old stomping grounds. But if you'd like a breakdown of every single start from Saturday, give the Plus Pitch podcast a listen and check out Nick's daily starting pitcher roundup over on pitcherlist.com. And now we'll head to the bullpen and check out the relievers that got saves and the closers that pitched outside of save situations or blew their saves. Starting with the former, Carlos Estevez recorded his 12th save with a perfect ninth. Estevez continues to not walk anyone. Trevor McGill also secured his 12th save, though he had to work around a run to get the job done. With Andres Munoz on the bench, Ryan Stanek secured the final out of the game to record his 7th save of the season and 2nd in a row. I think he needs to be rostered universally as he continues to vulture saves in Seattle. And lastly, Kenley Jansen got the final four outs of the game for his 11th save. And in terms of closers to pitch outside of save situations or blow their saves, Craig Kimbrel pitched the ninth with the Orioles up by four. Kimbrel's offense tacked on three insurance runs in the eighth, which ruined Kimbrel's chance for a save. Kyle Finnegan did the same, pitching the ninth with the Nationals up by four because the offense tacked on two insurance runs in the eighth. And lastly, for some odd reason, the Rays turned to Pete Fairbanks in the eighth with a 7-run deficit. Fairbanks surrendered a run in the awkward outing, and I can't find an explanation for why they turned to him. An unusually weird move by the Rays. But if you'd like a breakdown of notable relief pitching performances from Saturday, check out the Daily Reliever Ranks article over on pitcherlist.com. And before we look forward to today's games, we're going to take a quick break. And now we'll look forward to Sunday, June 16th, a day in which we'll have a full slate of 16 games as the A's and Twins partake in a doubleheader. My matchup of the day is Zach Wheeler versus Corbin Burns. We've got two of the best pitchers in the world squaring off. What more could you ask for? In terms of probable starters, we've got five guys in our auto starts tier, including Zach Wheeler and Corbin Burns. We've also got Tyler Glasnow versus the Royals, Dylan Cease in Queens, and Logan Gilbert against the Rangers. Our probably starts tier has eight guys, and that's where we'll find our streamer of the day in Mitchell Parker versus the Marlins. We just saw them get carved up by Hers, and Parker has a deep arsenal, so he should be able to get away with mistakes against a weak Marlins lineup. I'd also keep an eye out for Drew Thorpe in Arizona. Thorpe is a changeup-focused rookie, and the familiarity factor could come into effect in Arizona, giving Thorpe a shot at a solid six frames. Just don't expect a win as he pitches for the White Sox. In terms of hitter suggestions, I'd go for A's and Twins hitters in Minnesota as they take part in a doubleheader. The double at-bats here are ideal for streaming. I also got to go with the obligatory Rockies and Pirates hitters in Coors. It's the best hitter's park in baseball. I don't know what else to say. And now we'll close things out with our relievers to watch. Carlos Estevez is pitched on back-to-back days, so Luis Garcia or Matt Moore should get the ninth depending on matchups. And lastly, Craig Kimbrel is pitched on consecutive days and in three of the past four, so expect Yennier Cano to get the ninth if his save arises today. But that'll do it for today's episode of the First Pitch Podcast. Make sure to head on over to pitcherlist.com to check out all of the great articles and features we have on the site. Join PL Pro to gain access to the Discord to interact with Pitcherlist staff and members of the community, as well as to utilize the in-season tools to help you win your leagues. That'll wrap up this edition of the podcast. You can follow me on Twitter at Jake Crumpler. Tune in tomorrow and every day for a new installment of the podcast. Bubba will be back with you on Monday and throughout the week. And make sure to enjoy the day as we are blessed with another day of baseball.
This has been the First Pitch Podcast, brought to you by PitcherList.com. If you enjoyed today's episode, rate us on iTunes, follow us on Twitter at PitcherList, and help support what we do by joining our Discord with PitcherList Plus at PitcherList.com/plus.